You better not tell nobody but God. These words, whispered by a stepfather to his 14-year-old victim, set the boundaries of a young girl's entire world. Celie's story begins where too many stories end, in violence, shame, and enforced silence. But what happens when the only person you're allowed to speak to is God? What if those whispered prayers, scribbled in broken English on scraps of paper, become the very thing that saves you? The Color Purple isn't just about surviving abuse. It's about discovering that your voice, even when no one else will hear it, has the power to reshape your entire existence. Celie's letters begin as desperate confessions. Dear God, I am 14 years old. I have always been a good girl. The stumbling sentences mirror her confusion and pain. She writes because she has no choice. Her stepfather, Alfonso, has raped her repeatedly, stolen her two babies, and warned her that speaking would kill her dying mother. So she writes to the only witness she's allowed, God. These aren't polished diary entries. They're raw survival documents written in the Black Southern dialect that schools tried to erase. Celie's early letters accept horror as normal. He never had a kind word to say to me. But gradually, the acceptance cracks. Sentences grow longer. Questions appear. By the novel's end, when Celie addresses her final letter to Dear God, Dear Stars, Dear Trees, Dear Sky, Dear Peoples, Dear Everything, we're witnessing a complete spiritual revolution. From a God who looks like the white men who oppress her, to a divine presence in all living things. The discovery of Nettie's hidden letters creates a second narrative earthquake. For 30 years, Celie believed her beloved sister had abandoned her. Instead, Mister had intercepted every letter, hiding them in a trunk. Nettie's letters from Africa expand the story beyond one woman's suffering to a global meditation on colonialism and identity. Through Nettie's educated voice, we see Celie's children growing up in missionary care and European colonizers destroying African villages, revealing that patriarchy wears different masks but speaks the same language everywhere.
When Mr. seeks a wife, he wants Nettie, the pretty, educated sister. Celie offers herself instead, sacrificing her body to protect Nettie's future. I tell him I can fix myself up for him, she writes, performing an act of love so profound it hurts to witness. But protection has limits. When Nettie rejects Mister's advances, she must flee, promising to write constantly. Then, silence. For 30 years, Celie believes Nettie has forgotten her. She doesn't know Mister intercepts every letter, a calculated cruelty that takes your breath away. Those letters contained everything. News that Celie's children were alive, descriptions of African villages, philosophical questions about God and colonialism, and constant reassurance that Nettie never stopped loving her. When Celie discovers the letters, betrayal ignites transformative rage, but they reveal something equally powerful. Despite living on different continents, both sisters fought parallel battles against patriarchy. Nettie encounters Olinka men who say, a girl is nothing to herself, only to her husband can she become something, the same logic that governed Celie's life in Georgia. Their reunion represents more than personal joy. It's the restoration of a bond that neither distance nor cruelty could sever. I think this the youngest us ever felt, Celie observes, suggesting love can return us to ourselves, recovering what trauma tried to steal.
Shug Avery arrives sick, mean, and magnificent, a blues singer with a scandalous reputation. Mister has loved her for years, keeping her photograph while treating his wife like livestock. When he brings Shug home for Celie to nurse, everything shifts. At first, Shug calls Celie ugly, confirming what the world has always told her. But as Celie tends to her with gentle care, something changes. First time I got the full sight of Shug Avery's long black body with its black plum nipples look like her mouth, I thought I had turned into a man, Celie confesses. For the first time, she experiences desire rather than violation. What develops between them is revolutionary. Shug guides Celie to explore her own body with a mirror, a radical act of reclamation.
Why, Miss Seeley, you still a virgin, Shug tells her, redefining virginity as never having experienced pleasure. Seeley begins to understand that her body belongs to her. Through Shug, Seeley discovers a new god. When Seeley admits she's stopped writing to God because she imagines a big and old and tall and gray-bearded and white man who doesn't care about poor colored women, Shug offers an alternative. God is inside you and inside everybody else. It pisses God off if you walk by the color purple in a field somewhere and don't notice it. This theology frees Seeley from a punitive deity and opens her to spirituality rooted in joy. At dinner, Seeley announces she's leaving. When Mister tries to slap her, she stabs his hand with a knife. He calls her a black, ugly, ball-headed woman. She responds with a curse that reverberates through the novel. Until you do right by me, everything you touch will crumble. It's not just anger, it's prophecy, decades of rage finding its voice. In Memphis with Shug, Seeley discovers a talent for making pants, not restrictive dresses, but comfortable, practical pants for everyone. The business thrives, giving Seeley economic independence. Pants represent mobility and rejection of gender restrictions. In sewing for both women and men, Seeley reshapes the world. Final liberation comes when Seeley learns Alfonso wasn't her biological father. Her real father was a successful black businessman lynched by white competitors. This frees her from the shame of incest and connects her to a legacy of resistance. When Alfonso dies, Seeley inherits the house and store. The girl once sold like livestock becomes a property owner and heir to black economic power. Perhaps the novel's most surprising arc belongs to Mister, the man who bought Seeley, beat her, and hid her sister's letters for decades. After Seeley leaves, he nearly dies under the weight of his own cruelty. When Seeley returns years later, she barely recognizes him. The man who once scorned women's work now cooks, cleans, and sews. He tends a garden with gentle hands. Stripped of patriarchal armor, Mister has discovered what it means to simply be human. I'm satisfied this the first time I ever lived on Earth as a natural man, he tells Seeley. The more I wonder, the more I love. He admits that trying to control Sophia was like trying to hold on to a flood. When he proposes marriage again, Seeley declines but offers friendship. This balance demonstrates nuanced forgiveness, acknowledging growth without forgetting cruelty. The arc proposes something complex. Patriarchal violence is learned and can, with tremendous effort and genuine remorse, be unlearned. Transformation is possible without erasing accountability. Seeley's reunion with Nettie after 3 decades represents love's triumph over oppression. Yet the novel's power lies in what it took to get there. Seeley didn't wait for rescue. She found her voice through forbidden letters, discovered desire in Shug's touch when told she was too ugly for love, built a business from fabric and thread, and inherited property. She expanded God from a distant white man to the purple flowers blooming in fields, the stars overhead, the people at her table. The color purple becomes a meditation on noticing beauty in a life defined by violence. It pisses God off if you walk by the color purple in a field somewhere and don't notice it. This theology of attention suggests healing begins when we stop surviving and start living, when we claim our right to joy, beauty, and love. Seeley's transformation reminds us patriarchy's dismissed skills become tools of liberation. We're not defined by what was done to us, but by what we do next. So look for the purple. In moments patriarchy says don't matter, in friendships society dismisses, in work capitalism undervalues. Your voice matters. Your body belongs to you. Purple flowers are blooming, waiting for you to notice them.